I'm Captain Kevin Smith, and this is Throttle Up, a radio show and podcast dedicated to the proposition that critical thinking, when employed, can dramatically improve performance in whatever we are doing, enable us to solve problems that others avoid, equip us to become thought leaders instead of followers, and provide us with the intellectual resources and moral courage to support and defend America and its Constitution. Our motto is clarify, reason, win. That is, clarify the actual, employ analytic reason, and achieve mission success. Our website, throttleupradio.com, that has all kinds of information. Also, our podcast is located there, as well as iTunes. And of course, we have a blog, so please visit our website. Our support staff, Evergroove Studios for audio engineering services. They are located in Evergreen, Colorado, and Reflections Printing for multimedia support, and they are located in St. George, Utah. Our book is Critical Thinking Essentials, Quick Reference Handbook. It is available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. Our broadcast time on Red State Talk Radio, we are on the weekends, both Saturday and Sunday, on the main channel, that's at 7 p.m., and the Encore channel, that's at 6 p.m. Okay, welcome back to Throttle Up, and another weekend at the beginning of springtime. So where I live, spring is in the air, and looking forward to another nice spring and some outdoor recreational activities. Now, sometimes it's, when I prepare for a show, sometimes it's difficult to try to understand what is going on and try to figure things out from the perspective of what are the positive elements of this development. What can we learn from it? How should we think about it in terms of leading a meaningful, productive, and enjoyable life? We each have a life to live, and every one of us is important in the giant scheme of things. Every one of us has a life to live. We have been given this wonderful opportunity to express ourselves. And how do we express? Do we express ourselves in terms of beauty? Do we express ourselves in terms of what is true and what is productive, what is beneficial? And I guess you could say, okay, what are we doing that brings benefit to ourselves and others? And I guess I could say that we could sum it up in that phrase. And maybe you have other ideas about how to phrase it or how to word it. But I like this one. What can I do that will bring benefit to myself and to others? And I'm putting myself and others in this context, I'm putting myself and others at the same level. I think that we need to not neglect ourselves in the service of others. I think we need to be able to support ourselves. After all, if we neglect ourselves, we're not going to be much use down the road. never really understood that position and that attitude. I never really understood it. We need to take care of ourselves. I'll give you a good metaphor, and this is something that I've used before, but I think it's worth repeating. A good metaphor is that when you go flying on an airplane, airliner, you're on a trip, whatever, and before takeoff, you get a safety briefing. It could be virtual, it could be live, whatever, but before every takeoff, the cabin crew has to deliver a safety briefing, because safety is pretty important, and there are dangers that we have to manage when we fly airplanes, when we fly in airplanes. And one of the key features of the safety briefing is that if the pressurization fails and the oxygen masks deploy, the safety briefing informs us, encourages us, and indeed insists upon this: put your mask on first before you put it on another person, like a child that needs your help. And let me repeat that, because that's a really, really important aspect of what we do as humans. The safety briefing says, put your oxygen mask on first, and then put it on your seatmate, given that your seatmate, it may very well be a child, a smaller, or an adult with some physical issues. And to me, I take that across the board. I take that as a process in which I can bring meaning to my life, do things beneficial that are beneficial to me and others. And that's what we're trying to deal with here. We're trying to deal with that in this, you know, in this initiative that we call Throttle Up Radio Show and Podcast. We're trying to do that. What's beneficial? Certainly, from our perspective, what's beneficial is the ability to think critically. Now, remember that what is implied here is probably even more important than what is said. What is implied here is that we have the capability to think critically. We also have the responsibility to think critically. We have a solemn obligation to think critically. Otherwise, how are we going to do things that are beneficial to ourselves and others? So we can say that with respect to doing things that are beneficial, not harmful, but are beneficial, what are the key ingredients of that? And one of the keys, and my position has been for a very long period of time, one of the keys is the ability to think critically. And I have often discussed other things that relate to that in mostly in a direct way. There are a number of things that we can say that relate to that support that concept, that support that conceptual construct that exists, that we identify as critical thinking. I also have used terms like critical thinking and complex problem solving and other related things with respect to that. And one of the key ingredients here, or you can say the third leg of the stool, is critical decision making. So you have critical thinking, you have complex problem solving, and then you have critical decision making. So those are the three pillars by which we support ourselves as thinking human beings, as human beings capable of exercising reason. And those are the three pillars. Now, how do we deal with today what is going on? My view is this. And again, this is my opinion, and others may very well have different opinions. But my view and my opinion is that we are actually in this time and place, we are actually engaged in warfare. What is going on? It's a non-kinetic war that we are engaged in. And what is the battlefield? The battlefield is our mind space. That's the new battlefield. Now, you might say that, Kevin, you're a bit crazy in the head. I don't care. You know, that's my position, and I pretty much stand by it. If you will have a different position, that's fine, okay? But my position is that we are at war, that we are engaged in a battle, and the battlefield is our mind space. There are forces afoot that are trying to intervene in what we call our mind space. They are trying to plant ideas within this mind space, and the mind space contains ideas. The mind space is a non-physical aspect of reality. That is key to our understanding. Fundamentally, and you can say that that is not scientific because science deals with that which is tangible and that which is measurable and that which is objective versus subjective. I would say all of that stuff is nonsense. I'm sorry. And I have a lot of experience in this area, and I would say, by and large, all of that stuff is nonsense. Our mind space is, in fact, a part of reality, but it happens to be a non-tangible aspect of reality, as things like intuition and creativity and innovation. These are clearly aspects of our reality, but they're non-tangible. So our mind space is a new battlefield. The new battlefield is a non-tangible but actually real aspect of reality, and there are forces afoot that are trying to get into our mind space and plant ideas for their benefit, not for ours. What is their benefit? What they want to do is they want control. They want to be able to exercise control over the human population, thereby benefiting themselves only at the expense or at the exclusion of others. That's what's going on. That is the key. I believe that that is the key to understanding of what's going on and to formulating a response to what is going on, formulating a response to this current situation that we find ourselves in. Now, one of the key aspects of critical thinking, and you've heard me say this time and time again, and I never think I say it enough, frankly, is when you begin to engage your critical thinking capabilities, the first order of business is to clarify the actual. You have to be clear about what is actually going on. That's the key. Okay, you have to be clear about what is actually going on. And in this case, what is actually going on? In this case, what is actually going on is we are engaged in some kind of war. Warfare is going on. We are at war with other groups of human beings that wish to dominate us and wish to bring about terms that have been used that I did not come up with, but they have been thrown about there, and I will use them as well. They are trying to bring about what is often called the New World Order. The New World Order for them is to elevate themselves at the expense of others and to impose upon us a dictatorial system that exists throughout the world and eradicate individualism, eradicate democracy, eradicate everything that stands in their way. What do they want? They want supremacy and they want control. That's what they want. We are at war right now because they have unleashed everything that they have available and without constraint and without any moral or ethical limitations. They have thrown all of that away and they are out for supreme control over humanity. And it doesn't matter to them how they get it, as long as they get it. So what they are doing runs completely counter to our life's goals, which is to do things that are beneficial for ourselves and others. They are doing things that are beneficial only to themselves and this small group, and the others will be disadvantaged, will be subjugated, will be even enslaved to serve this small group of so-called elites. Okay, so that's what actually is going on. And we're going to listen to a section of former President Donald Trump's address to CPAC. And here in this audio clip, here he's going to explain to us the battle space. He's going to explain to us the strategy and tactics of these people and what they have done already to damage this country and the reason in which this country was founded, the foundation of our democratic republic, has been destroyed. They have bombed and obliterated the very foundation by which a democratic republic can exist. It cannot exist in a vacuum. It has to have some kind of a foundation. And what is that foundation? I said this many, many times. The foundation of any democratic republic, including ours, is the ability to express the ability of the individual who is considered to be a sovereign individual, the ability of the individual to express its desires such that the political class can respond effectively to the consent of the governed. And that's in our Constitution. We are a constitutional republic. The Constitution is a contract between the government and the individual. That's the Constitution, including the Bill of Rights. That is a contract. That's a sacred contract that we have in this country. It's a very, very unusual country. Very unusual. There's no divine right of kings. There's no monarchy. There's none of that stuff. We have a sacred contract with the government, and that is our Constitution. It's a constitutional republic based upon the consent of the governed. And if we cannot express ourselves in the voting process by which the consent of the governed is determined, then we don't have a democratic republic. We have a dictatorship, may even have a tyrannical system, but we don't have that. So there are forces afoot that want us to not continue to be what we are. They do not want us to continue to be a constitutionally based democratic republic. They wish us to become something else.
We had almost 20, if you think of it, we had almost 20 states go into the Supreme Court so that we didn't have a standing problem. They rejected it. They rejected it. They should be ashamed of themselves for what they've done to our country. They didn't have the guts or the courage to make the right decision. They didn't want to talk about it. You had the case led by the great state of Texas. 18 states went in. You don't have standing. Oh, let's not talk about it. They didn't have the guts to do what should be done. And that's on top of all of the other forms of cheating, but this is the most basic of all. They would have local courts and local politicians change the rules, in some cases a day or two before the election. This should never be allowed to happen to another presidential candidate or presidential race. Should never be allowed to happen. Today, I want to outline the steps that we must take to have an election system in this country that is honest, fair, and accurate. We need one election day, not 45, 30. One day, like it's been. And if Republicans don't get this and the other things I'm going to say, then you should, like the Supreme Court, be ashamed of yourselves. One day, and the only people that should be allowed to vote by mail are people that can be proven to be either very sick or out of the country or military where they can't do it. One day, they have millions and millions of ballots sitting around all over the place for long periods of time. Gee, I wonder what happens with those ballots. I wonder what happens. It's common sense. It's a disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace. There should be a legitimate reason for someone to vote absentee. Has to have a reason. We should eliminate the insanity of mass and very corrupt mail-in voting. We must have voter ID. You know, to get into the Democrat National Convention, when they had the convention, you needed voter ID. You needed an ID card. You couldn't get in unless you had an ID. So many people told me you can't get in that place. You need ID. Nobody had ID. You need voter ID. They know that. This is a con job. They're conning everybody. They know that. They know the wall was good. They knew the wall would work, but they didn't want to have it because we wanted it. I made one big mistake in the wall. I should have said, we will not have a wall. And then they would have said, let's build a wall. I made a big mistake. I made a big mistake. I'm sorry. Took us a year and a half extra because of that mistake. We will not have a wall. We need a wall immediately, said Chuck Schumer. We need universal signature matching. They want to pass a bill where you don't have to match signatures, where signatures don't mean anything. Now, they know it's all, just like with the wall, just like with voter ID, when you need to go into anything that's Democrat-run, you need it. But for voting, which is our most sacred institution, they don't want to let you have it. There should be a 100% requirement to verify the citizenship of every person who votes. There must be a chain of custody protections for every ballot. Every ballot. And you saw what happened in Detroit and Philadelphia and many other places, swing states mostly. all over, but swing states mostly. You saw what happened. You saw what was going on. You saw that more people, you take a look at the votes. When you have more votes than you have people, that's a problem, right? Is that a problem? You know, we have a little problem adjusting in Detroit. We seem to have more votes than we have people. A lot more votes. An election-changing number. We're not talking about a number where you catch. No, these are election-changing numbers. In Pennsylvania, they had hundreds of thousands of more votes than they had people voting. What's that all about? What's that all about? Cheating, they say. Yeah, I'd say so. In the history of our country, and it has taken place for years in Pennsylvania and Detroit and various other places, but there's tremendous, never like this, because they use COVID as a way of cheating. That's what happened, and everybody knows it. Hundreds of thousands and millions of ballots. They used it as a way of getting what they've wanted for many years, and the Republicans have to do something about it. They better do something about it. Our election process is worse than that in many cases of a third world country. You know that. You saw what was going on. Even if you consider nothing else, it is undeniable that election rules were illegally changed at the last minute in almost every swing state, with the procedures rewritten by local politicians. You're not allowed to do that. And local judges, they want more time, they want this, they want that, all done by local politicians or local judges, as opposed to state legislatures as required by the Constitution of the United States. And these are numbers that are massive. These aren't little numbers. These are numbers that in each state is a transformative number. It changes the outcome of the election. And it's not close. Regardless of your political views, this should concern you as a constitutional matter. And the Supreme Court, again, didn't have the guts or the courage to do anything about it. And neither did other judges. And Democrats even admitted in Time magazine, which is, I would say, on the liberal side, that they couldn't, they just couldn't hold it in. They had to brag about it. Because what they did, they had to brag about it. They couldn't do it. You got to read the story. It's a disaster. It's a disaster for our country that we can allow something so corrupt to happen. Read that article. I really encourage you. You read that article. Yet all of the election integrity measures in the world will mean nothing if we don't have free speech. And that's where we're at now. If Republicans can be censored for speaking the truth and calling out corruption, we will not have democracy, and we will have only left-wing tyranny. And we can do this. We can do this. We're smarter than they are. We're tougher than they are. For some reason, we just don't. We don't get it done. We let them attack our businesses, and we don't attack their businesses. I believe your numbers are bigger than their numbers, but you're nicer than they are. You're not as vicious as they are. In the past, we would debate. I would have it. I'd debate. You've seen me for many years. They throw something. I debate. They debate. Who knows who wins? You know, people go, they vote, they see what happens. But they would have an idea. They would disagree. The public would hear it. The debate and discourse would take place. And then somebody would make a decision. You would win. You would lose. The public would make up its mind. But now there is no debate because they refuse to allow our side to even speak or be heard. They don't want debate because we have easy victories in a debate. Very easy victories. It's called common sense. It's called other things, but it's called common sense. So they don't want to debate. The time has come to break up big tech monopolies and restore fair competition. Republicans, conservatives must open up our platforms and repeal Section 230 liability protection. And if the federal government refuses to act, then every state in the union where we have the votes, which is a lot of them, big tech giants like Twitter, Google, and Facebook, should be punished with major sanctions whenever they silence conservative voices. and Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida and in Texas and in other states are doing this. If they do what they're doing, Florida, and that legislation will pass, and Texas and others will have tremendous power to do what's right and what's fair. We have no time to waste. Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats in Congress are racing to pass a flagrantly unconstitutional attack on the First Amendment and the integrity of our elections known as H.R. 1. Do you know what H.R. 1 is? It's a disaster. Their bill would drastically restrict political speech, empower the federal government to shut down dissent, and turn the Federal Election Commission into a partisan political weapon. In addition, it virtually eliminates voter ID requirements nationwide, effectively ends all registration deadlines. Can you believe this? Requires states to give ballots to felons, automatically registers every welfare recipient to vote, and puts unaccountable, unelected bureaucrats in charge of drawing congressional districts. That's going to be a lot of fun. This monster must be stopped. It cannot be allowed to pass. Now more than ever is the time for tough, strong, and energetic Republican leaders who have spines of steel. We need strong leadership. We cannot have leaders who show more passion for condemning their fellow Americans than they have ever shown for standing up to Democrats, the media, and the radicals who want to turn America into a socialist country. Instead of attacking me and, more importantly, the voters of our movement, top establishment Republicans in Washington should be spending their energy in opposing Biden, Pelosi, Schumer, and the Democrats. I've said to some of them, I said, you know, during the Obama years and now during Biden, if you spent the same energy on attacking them, you'd actually be successful, as you do on attacking me in many cases. The Democrats don't have grandstanders like Mitt Romney, Little Ben Sasse, Richard Burr, Bill Cassidy, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, Pat Toomey. And in the House, Tom Rice, South Carolina, Adam Kinzinger, Dan Newhouse, Anthony Gonzalez, that's another beauty, Fred Upton, Jamie Herrera Butler, Peter Meyer, John Katko, David Valadao, and of course the warmonger, a person that loves seeing our troops fighting, Liz Cheney. How about that? The good news is in her state, she's been censured, and in her state, her poll numbers have dropped faster than any human being I've ever seen. So hopefully they'll get rid of her with the next election. Get rid of them all. Democrats are vicious. Remember this, it's true. Democrats are vicious. He said evil. Well, there is evil there. But they're vicious, they're smart, and they do one thing. Got to hand it to them. They always stick together. You don't have Mitt Romneys in the group. They always stick together. Fortunately, for the Republican Party, the Democrats have horrible policies like open borders, sanctuary cities, defunding the police, and the ridiculous, totally ridiculous, Green New Deal. So they stick together, they're smart, they're vicious, they got everything going, but their policies are no good. So hence we have, congratulations, the Republican Party. After this, they may not stick with those policies. We have to be careful. No, their policies are horrible. Think of it. Defund the police. How did that work out? But if Republicans do not stick together, the rhinos that we're surrounded with will destroy the Republican Party and the American worker, and will destroy our country itself. The rhinos, you know, Republican in name only. But the Republican Party is united. The only division is between a handful of Washington, D.C. establishment political hacks and everybody else all over the country. I think we have tremendous unity. When you look at the crowds outside that want your seat so badly, they will take your seat in 2 seconds. They want your seat. Congratulations. Congratulations on getting in, by the way. I'm very happy.
Okay, so that's a section of Donald Trump's speech recently. This is actually a few days ago, last Sunday. And the reason why I'm playing it is, well, I guess a couple of reasons. Number one is that he had something to say, which was important. Number two, he is a great public speaker, actually the best I've ever seen. And number three, he is defining very clearly what is the battle space. He is defining what has occurred, what is occurring, and what is likely to occur in the battle space for the battlefield for our mind space. The battle space is now our mind space, and the warfare is going on within each and every one of our minds. Our mind space is, in fact, the battlefield, and what's happening. There's all kinds of things that are going on. There are battles raging across landscape. He talked about election fraud, the unconstitutionality of changing election laws at the 11th hour by other than the state legislatures. He talked about free speech. He talked about mail-in ballots, the disaster of mail-in ballots. He talked about shutting down debate. Now, that is clearly an attempt to influence what enters our mind space. Or the other way of saying that is that, do you allow these things to enter your mind space without being skeptical, without being discerning? Do you just allow these things to enter your mind space and take it for granted that whatever is being put forward is in fact the truth, is in fact something that is useful to you? Please don't do that. Please be skeptical, for sure. Please consider carefully what you will embrace as being the truth and stuff like that. Now, with respect to that, we're going to spend a little bit more quality time on this thing, this aspect, this non-tangible aspect of reality that we call our mind space. We're going to spend a little bit more time on that because I think it's very, very important. And remember this, we are in control of our own mind space. We will allow or reject certain things to enter, or certain things that we embrace as being truthful, as providing for that which will be beneficial to us and others. What is that which will be beneficial to us and others? We need to know that. This knowing, we talked a little bit about this a couple of recently, we talked about the theory of knowledge, which goes hand in glove with critical thinking. Actually, it is an aspect of critical thinking, very specifically, but it deals with this thing that we call knowledge. What is knowledge? What is the truth? How do we establish a belief? How do we establish that which is called a justified true belief? How do we recognize what is true? How is that done? And we need to be very good at that stuff. This needs to be a major component of our education and training, which it is not, unfortunately, but it needs to be. Okay, we're going to do a little bit more work on our mind space. We have an audio clip here. I think it's about 9 minutes long, and we'll listen to that. because this comes from the Academy of Ideas, and of course it's very useful. This is a great organization. I would highly recommend their work to anybody.
Man is a mystery. It needs to be unraveled. And if you spend your whole life unraveling it, don't say that you've wasted time. I am studying that mystery because I want to be a human being. Each of us occupies two worlds. There is the outer world of people, places, and things, and there is the inner world of our thoughts, feelings, sensations, and intuitions. The outer world we share with others, while our inner world is a place where we stand alone. These two worlds also differ in the skills needed for their navigation. We can be a great success in the external world and all the while be racked by immense inner suffering. On the other hand, the world may be crumbling around us, but if we have learned to conquer our psyche, we can still exist in relative peace. In our day, where success is primarily measured by external metrics, most of us devote more energy to conquering the world outside of us than we do to mastering the world within. But this choice can come with great costs. For our inner world is the one place from which escape is impossible, and so the quality of our life is always contingent on the state of our psyche. In this video, we are going to provide a guide for achieving a more harmonious relationship to this world within. "Not everything that is faced can be changed," wrote James Baldwin, "but nothing can be changed until it is faced." The first step toward attaining a greater mastery of our inner world is to stop denying, ignoring, or numbing ourselves to the events of our psyche. Many people, afraid or ashamed of what they may see if they take an honest look within, resort to drugs and alcohol or other defense mechanisms to quiet any psychic conflicts. But the more we seal ourselves off from our inner world, the more we create a threat from what should be our greatest ally. The path to inner harmony always goes through our psychic conflicts, as denial will only cause such conflicts to intensify. If shame is preventing us from admitting to our psychological problems, then it can be helpful to realize that psychological discord is far more the norm than the exception, and that inner demons are but an inevitable part of what it means to be human. As we begin this process of opening up to our inner world, we may be frightened by what we discover. For the longer we have spent denying what is going on within, the less comfortable we will be with the strange thoughts and disturbing emotions that may rise to the fore. We may even wonder if the state of our psyche is in such disarray that a descent into madness is possible. The psychologist Carl Jung noticed that many of his patients had this very concern, but he believed this concern could be tempered when we recognize that this is but a natural phase in the process of inner growth. "When a patient begins to feel the inescapable nature of his inner development," wrote Jung, "he may easily be overcome by a panic fear that he is slipping helplessly into some kind of madness that he can no longer understand. More than once I have had to reach for a book on my shelves to show my patient his terrifying fantasy in the form in which it appeared 400 years ago. This has a calming effect, because the patient then sees that he is not alone in a strange world which nobody understands, but is part of the great stream of human history, which has experienced countless times the very things that he regards as a pathological proof of his craziness." Once we are willing to face up to what is taking place in our psyche, we can then determine what is causing our inner discord. Are we crippled by anxiety and self-doubt? Are we consumed by hopelessness and depression? Or do intrusive thoughts haunt our every move? Identifying what is wrong with us is far more important than answering the question of why we are the way we are. Trying to solve the riddle of why will often lead us on a never-ending search that only produces self-pity, resentment, and no clear answers. But if we answer the question of what exactly is ailing us, then we can focus our attention on devising strategies to overcome our problems. The strategies we devise, however, must obey one overriding criteria. They must introduce a tangible degree of novelty into our life. More of the same will only perpetuate our problems, and therefore our goal at this stage is to search for techniques and tools that change the way we experience and interact with our inner world. But what tools will work best for us can never be known in advance. Far too often, people view psychological ailments exactly as they do those of the physical body. We all share the same general structure of the body, and so the cure for a broken leg, an infection, or a virus will require similar steps for each of us. But in searching for ways to overcome the conflicts of our inner world, we need to recognize that while there is a uniformity to our psyche, there is no unity. For on the one side, our psyche is sculpted by our human nature, and this produces the collective side of man. But we are also individuals. No two people share the same environment, genes, life history, goals, or innate strengths and weaknesses, and this individuality produces a unique configuration to the terrain of our inner world and necessitates an idiosyncratic trial-and-error approach to the mastery of our psyche. For as Jung never tired of stating, there is no one psychology that defines us all, nor is there one set of psychological techniques that will be universally effective. To speak of a science of individual psychology, wrote Jung, is already a contradiction in terms. It is only the collective element in the psychology of an individual that constitutes an object for science, for the individual is by definition something unique that cannot be compared with anything else. A psychologist who professes a scientific individual psychology is simply denying individual psychology. He exposes his individual psychology to the legitimate suspicion of being merely his own psychology. The psychology of every individual would need its own manual, for the general manual can deal only with collective psychology. Richard Bach echoed Jung's sentiment when he said that if ever there were a manual written for advanced souls, it would have to end with the following words: "Everything in this book may be wrong. We can turn to people for advice and use the tools they have devised, but what will work best for our current situation is for us to discover. If we try a technique that others have used with great success and it does little to help us, we should not take this as a sign that we are incurable. It just means we need a different tool to escape from the chasm of our mind into which we have fallen. If we really desire to attain a level of mastery over our psyche, we should experiment with techniques that work on all three of the main forms of human experience: our behaviors, our thoughts, and our emotions." Behaviorists, wrote Michael Mahoney, have favored behavior as the primary force in human experience and argued that changes in motor activity produce changes in attitudes and affect. Cognitivists have rallied around the primary power of thought and argued that changes in thinking produce changes in both behavior and feeling. The third group, variously called humanists, experientialists, and evocative therapists, have asserted the primacy of emotionality in driving the other two realms. Not surprisingly, each group has endorsed a different emphasis in psychological services. Behaviorists have emphasized action, cognitivists have been partial to insight and reflection, and humanists have encouraged emotional experience and expression. Fortunately, there are behavioral, cognitive, and experiential techniques that address all the most common forms of psychological suffering, and so there is no shortage of tools at our disposal. We merely need to seek them out, experiment with a variety of them, and exploit the gains from those techniques that have a positive effect on our life. As we begin on this trial and error journey, there is a simple shift in our mindset that can help us remain persistent, and this is learning to take life a little less seriously. For while W.B. Yeats may have claimed that we can only begin to live when we conceive life as tragedy, it may be truer to say that we can only begin to live when we conceive life as comedy. Many people are perpetually weighed down by their fears, anxieties, doubts, and hostilities because they see everything that happens to them as having life-shattering implications. But with such a mindset, we place the weight of the world on our shoulders, and in so doing, we are inevitably crushed. To grant us a lightness to our step that can energize and embolden us as we strive to overcome our inner demons and to create a more harmonious state of our inner world, we should try something different. We should laugh at the darkness of our thoughts, smile at the moment of a fear, or feel excited at the rush of anxiety. As soon as you have made a thought, laugh at it. This may seem like strange advice, but as the poet Robert Frost wisely remarked, if we couldn't laugh, we would all go insane.
Okay, some good, you know, that is good stuff that we ought to consider as we contemplate our mind space and what occupies our mind space. What do we allow in? Are we the gatekeepers, or do we have the gate wide open, or do we have the gate completely shut, permanently shut? And my position or my answer is, well, we ought to be gatekeepers, and we ought to have some kind of a discrimination algorithm that we employ to determine for ourselves what enters our mind space, what we allow to enter our mind space, what we embrace. Often it's called, and I have used this term in the past, it's called a belief and value system. We can break that down into four very simple elements. So with respect to our belief and value system, and, you know, as this audio clip that I just ran, you know, it's often it's an individual aspect of reality. But what is our belief and value system? Under belief, we can put, is this thing true or is it false? So it's true or false, something, whatever is being offered. Is it true? Is it false? And you might also add to this, is it beneficial for myself and others, or does it not bring benefit? Is it destructive to consider or to do such a thing? The other one is value. And this could be simply organized as a moral. Does our value system embrace morality? Is it morally and ethically valid? Is it morally and ethically grounded? Or is it immoral? Is it immoral? Is it unethical to do such a thing, to consider doing such a thing? Okay, so that's the first order of business, or you can say, in effect, that that's our the first algorithm that we employ when we assume the responsibility of being the gatekeeper of our mind space. We employ that belief and value algorithm, and we talked a lot about true, something is true. We talked a lot about, with respect to the theory of knowledge, the justified true belief. What is that? What does that mean, justified true belief? And we'll talk more about that in future segments for sure, because it is important for us when we go to the first step of critical thinking, which is clarify the actual. We are asking ourselves and others, what is actually going on? Not what other people want us to think, but what is actually going on objectively without any bias? What is actually going on? And if it is true, how do we establish that thing is in fact true? What is our justified true belief mechanisms for arriving at that understanding? What is our justified true belief algorithm? So here we're going to spend some time in the near future dealing with under belief. We're going to be dealing with the theory of knowledge. And how do we know that something is true? How do we know that? And that's going to be a rather interesting intellectual journey that we will take together. Okay, so I see that we're coming to an end of another Throttle Up Radio show and podcast. Keep in mind that we are always available on iTunes, or you can go to our website, throttleupradio.com, and you can download these audio podcasts. And we have a bunch of them, and lots of resources available, lots of things for us to consider and to listen to and to embrace with respect to this whole idea of critical thinking. Again, critical thinking is not what you think, but how you think. We'll see you all next week. Well, that went fast. So this is a close of another show, another Throttle Up. And before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here. And I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. And I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.